Nightlife with Sarah McDonald on ABC Radio.
Well, time to talk news of religion and ethics on Nightlife. And this week we're going to focus on religious freedom because Philip Ruddock is heading a panel which is examining whether Australian law adequately protects the human right to freedom of religion. Now, this came as a bit of a trade-off with the Same-Sex Marriage Act when Conservative members of Parliament had a fierce debate with members of their own party as well as Labor and the crossbench, arguing about further protections for those who had a moral or religious objection to marrying a same-sex couple. The amendments were voted down. This inquiry has come out of it. And weighing in on this is the Australian National Secular Lobby. They've made a submission to the inquiry, and to talk to us about it is Jane Caro, who's a member of the National Secular Lobby. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sarah.
So this has come out of this whole same-sex marriage debate, and it's now been found that the public will find out what people are submitting to this inquiry, but we don't know yet who's made submissions arguing for religious freedom or what those arguments are. Is that right?
Yes, as far as I'm aware, that's right. I don't know. They may have been putting submissions up in the last few days and weeks, but if they have, I haven't seen them. Originally they were going to be kept private, which I thought was a very bad idea. So I think it's excellent that we are actually going to be able to see the for and against arguments.
Mm. So you're weighing in on this. What are the secular lobby arguing? What have you made clear in your submission about this?
Well, I think one of the very important things we've made clear is that, in fact, while freedom of religion is very important, it is no more important than freedom from religion. And that, in fact, the religious organisations in Australia today already have quite considerable extra rights and privileges over ordinary Australians. So, for example, religious organisations and churches don't pay any tax. That's a pretty big privilege. And secondly, they all have and have had for a very long time, some decades, a statutory exemption to the Anti-Discrimination Act, both the national, the federal Anti-Discrimination Act, and in each state as well, which all have their own anti-discrimination
acts. So they can discriminate in terms of who they employ?
Yes, they can discriminate on all sorts of levels. And in fact, one of the problems with this statutory exemption is that it's an exemption they can use or not use as they feel like at the time. And they don't really have to be very open and overt about who they discriminate against and why they discriminate against them. And this means, of course, that people like teachers who might be looking for a job could apply for a job in a faith-based school that they've got no chance of getting because perhaps they're gay or perhaps they're remarried after divorce or they're not a religious believer, without knowing that, in fact, they're already not got a chance of getting the job because no one's telling them that overtly. And it's a big thing to apply for a job, get your hopes up, put a whole lot of energy and effort into something you've got no hope of getting. I think the secular lobby believes strongly.
So you're going to argue for a wind back of their ability to discriminate?
Not necessarily argue for a winding back of their right to discriminate. But I think there's a really strong case to be made that it should have to be much more overt. It should have to be on all their advertising, on all their prospectus, on all their job ads, you know, so that they say we discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation and marital status. And that, you know, that has to be on the website, that has to be everywhere so that people know. They're fully informed about what they're getting themselves into, particularly, for example, if you want to send your child to a faith-based school, it's important for you to know that they may not choose teachers based on their ability to do the job, but on their beliefs.
But don't people know that? If you're sending your child to a Catholic school, you know what the Catholic Church has been against same-sex marriage and won't be having it in their churches. And
well, you do and you don't, because of course they use this exemption when it suits them and not when it doesn't. So they might hire the gay physics teacher because it's really hard to get physics teachers, because they don't have to use the exemption, and they might ignore the fact that somebody has remarried after divorce. But the trouble is, all it takes is a zealous parent or a change of, principle or whatever it is, and that person could lose their job with no way of going back on it. So, in fact, it's confusing to the public because they use the exemption or maybe they don't use the exemption. So people aren't really clear on what the process is.
Mm-hmm. So you'd make it clear that there are already these exemptions and when they're being used and when they're not.
Well, I think you should say to them, if you choose to discriminate, you should have to do it consistently, even when it doesn't suit you. And you should have to make it really clear and overt, because anything else is confusing, and it also makes people do things that they wouldn't otherwise do if they were fully informed.
Mm. So what is your stance on the whole? This kind of always gets focused on the great cake debate about whether the baker should bake a cake if they don't believe in gay marriage for the gay wedding. But of course, at the other heart of it is churches saying, well, we shouldn't have to marry people in our church.
They don't have to anyway. They have long been able to say to divorced people, we won't marry you because you're divorced. It is exactly the same. They need no extra exemption to be able to say to a gay couple, no, this religion doesn't endorse you, we will not marry you. That remains the same. They don't need extra.
They don't need extra. No. So what's your argument on the cake debate?
My argument on the cake debate is, as a person who runs her own business myself, I know how incredibly easy it is to say no to work you don't want to do. All you have to do is resist the urge to rub their nose in the reason why. You simply have to say you're too busy, you're booked up, whatever. But I also think it's a furphy. There is going to be a big explosion of the number of people who are wanting to get married. They have just broadened their market potential by about 10%, if that's the percentage.
Yeah, but there has been cases of this in Ireland.
Yes.
Because people bring it to court, bring it, you know, push it to the edge, lobby groups, to actually focus in on the law and discrimination.
And that's because somebody's decided they wanted to be nasty to a excited couple who wanted to get married. And instead of just saying to them, I'm so sorry, I'm busy, I can't possibly make your cake for that day, I wish you well for the future, and being polite and courteous, they've decided to make an issue of it. Really, there's no need to make an issue of it. For the vast majority of cake bakers, tuba players, you know, everybody else we're talking about, florists, they will try to hold them back, whatever their religious beliefs may be, from getting a slice of the incredible amount of extra profit you can make when you put wedding in front of any kind of purchase.
Right. So what else have you argued in your submission in terms of if Philip Ruddock is looking at whether there is religious freedom and if it's adequate?
Yeah, we've argued that Australia has very strong religious freedoms. There is no state-based religion. Everyone is entitled to worship in their own way. Your beliefs are entirely your own. That we have no religious tests for going into parliament or anything like that. And that, in fact, one of the things we may be neglecting and may be in danger of losing is freedom from religion, the right of people not to have to give special and extra consideration to religious beliefs over any other kind of belief.
So what's your example here? What do you mean by that? Where are we lacking freedom from religion?
Well, I think in things, for example, like the exemption from the statutory exemption from the Anti-Discrimination Act, and indeed I think there's a big argument that could be made about why automatically religious organisations are exempt from paying any taxes. Those are things that we could certainly have a broader discussion about, and how in secular Australia we feel about that. And also I think we have to be very careful about the increase in religiosity in our society, so that we know that in Parliament, for example, there's vastly more people with religious beliefs in Parliament, strong religious agendas, than
but less
necessarily
in the population.
Yeah.
But it's gone down in the population, the last census showed.
Yes, yeah. It's Australians are losing their religion. But, I mean, the fight, for example, to get voluntary assisted dying through in Victoria, the fact that in New South Wales and Queensland abortion is still illegal, it's on the Crimes Act, for example, things like this are really driven by religious agendas. Now, there's nothing compulsory about voluntary gives it away, assisted dying. There's nothing compulsory about reproductive rights. Nobody who has a conscientious objection to those things has to participate. However, people who don't have a conscientious objection feel strongly they have the right to access those things. We have a creeping theocracy, soft theocracy. And the separation of powers, interestingly enough, between church and state in Australia is not as strong in our constitution and in the way that the High Court has interpreted our constitution as it is in the US, which is interesting given that that's a much more overtly religious country than we are. They, for example, are constitutionally prevented from giving public funding to religious-based schools. We interpreted a few prepositions differently in our almost identical law, and we can give public funding to religious faiths.
Are you arguing that should be taken away? Because you've also said in your submission that proselytising in schools is intellectual child abuse.
Yes. Well, I think the National Secular Lobby feels very strongly that school is there to teach things that have evidence behind them, and that it is about secular knowledge. I've always liked John Stuart Mill's definition of the secular, that it is not against religion, but it is about all the things that have nothing to do with religion. And to a large extent, academic education doesn't have anything to do with religion, unless you are looking at comparative religion and study of the history of religion. But to have schools that are proselytising a particular religion is problematic for those of us who are secular. However, you know, if parents want to choose those schools, I have no problem with them choosing them, as long as they're fully informed about the way the school, you know, selects students, selects families and selects teachers.
Although public school have scripture classes too.
They do, but they're voluntary and you can opt out. And they have a wide variety of scripture classes. So they might have Anglican, Uniting Church, Catholic, Jewish, Muslim, whatever is on offer.
Yeah. So in saying that proselytising is intellectual child abuse and recognising at the same time as you are that parents have a choice to send them there, what are you saying here? Was that being provocative? Why did you put that in the submission?
I think it's a belief. I guess if the religious are to have their freedom to make their statements about belief, then the secular have their freedom to make theirs as well. And so, yes, it is partly provocative. It is to drive debate. It's to get people thinking. I mean, I do have a strong belief that there's no such thing as a Catholic child, a Muslim child, or an Anglican child. There are children of Catholic parents, Anglican parents, and Muslim parents. I mean, every person should get to choose their own religious faith rather than be kind of groomed into it from an early age. But, you know, families will pass on their values. We all do. You know, neither of my children are believers. Well, that's probably because I wasn't. However, I let them go to scripture when they wanted to because I thought it was up to them to decide what they wanted to believe. And I think, you know, the National Secular Lobby basically believes in the right of all people to make up their own mind about their beliefs about the world and not be restricted in their freedoms because of someone else's belief. And that's the problem with a gay couple who want to get married and who are, you know, really treated incredibly rudely and dismissively by a cake maker. The cake maker doesn't have to do that, and they can still avoid making the cake if they feel strongly about it.
So what would be your ideal outcome out of this inquiry that Philip Ruddock is chairing about religious freedom?
Oh, my ideal outcome would be that religious organisations were asked to nominate the basis on which they want an exemption from the statutory the Sex Discrimination Act and have to publicise it. I doubt very much that that will happen. So my ideal outcome would really be that we leave things pretty much as they are. I think in a way the religious lobby have made a mistake, you know, making a big song and dance about their so-called lack of freedoms, because, of course, it's given people like me an opportunity to actually shine a light on the freedoms they have now to avoid obeying the laws that everyone else has to obey, the tax law and, of course, the anti-discrimination laws.
Right. Well, if people want to make a submission to the inquiry, they've actually got an extended amount of time to do that. So it's still open, and you can check out the website. I'll put a link to our website and people can have a look and see what the terms of reference are and whether they want to engage in the debate. Thanks, Jane.
My pleasure, Sarah.
Jane Caro, who is representing on many of her hats tonight, she's wearing the National Secular Lobby hat. Look, a text came in about religious organisations and paying tax. I've looked it up on the ATO site, and registered religious institutions may be entitled to access tax concessions, income tax exemptions, fringe benefit tax concessions and goods and services tax concessions, but they must be a religious institution that is not for profit and to advance or promote religious purposes. and the beliefs and practices of members constitute a religion. Religion involves a belief in a supernatural being, thing or principle, and the acceptance of canons of conduct that give effect to that belief. That is from the ATO website.